Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and this week on the Roundup, we're going to be taking a look at three questions that all international admissions offices should be asking themselves. This is a time in international education that is unprecedented. Bottom line is, no one knows what's next, and there are some really daunting challenges ahead for international admissions offices around the world. And I certainly encourage all of you to keep up the good fight and know that you have a friend in me. So I'm looking forward to the chat today. And at SMIE Consulting, we're always looking for ways that we can be better serving you as our international education community here in the United States. So appreciate those of you who are joining me live on Facebook. We also are podcasting this, so those that are listening in on the podcast, thanks so much for adding us to your playlist every week. We're coming up on 90 episodes of the Roundup over the last almost 2 years now, so we're very excited about what's to come in the next month or two with what we're doing at SMIE Consulting. And some of the new virtual challenges we're going to be taking on for helping connect students and universities overseas. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, today, we take three of the stories from our SMIE Consulting newsletter, e-newsletter that comes out on Monday mornings called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. That's social media and international ed news. We divide it up, usually have about five or six social media stories, as well as about 15 to 20, and it's almost 30 in the last few weeks with all the COVID-19 related news. And it's hard to digest, and that's why we put it together in a newsletter format. And we've started to segment our stories in the articles in the newsletter, one of which is Solutions Central, and takes aim at some of the articles that have come out that have constructive ways that international admissions offices can be changing to meet the challenges that are ahead. We look at what students are thinking. A lot of surveys are coming and going right now, both domestically and internationally, that are looking at student behavior and where their interests are changing or what their thoughts are. We look at what fall 2020 is looking like for different colleges. So we're going to take a look at that, test optional debate, and then a global roundup of different news stories and how other countries are responding as well. So that's what's happening in the e-newsletter that comes out. So if you're not already subscribed to that, you can go to the link that I've just dropped in the comments section on the Facebook page. That takes you to the SMIE Consulting newsletter for this week, and you can hit the subscribe button to add your email address and contact information to that mailing list. So hopefully that'll give you a head start on what we're going to talk about here on the Roundup on Wednesdays. And that always includes three questions, and three questions that come out of the articles that we see, and maybe trends in some of the articles that we're seeing, and what we see as some of the biggest issues facing our industry today. And chief among those is our first topic: how can international admissions survive these times? I know for many of you right now, it's just about getting the fall and seeing, doing everything you can to make sure you get a class in. It's probably going to be anything unlike any class you've ever had in terms of who's actually going to physically show up come the end of or the end of the summer, and who's able to get in the country for orientation. So for me, when I as part of my work, I do consulting with a number of organizations, including IDP Connect, where I do a monthly article for them. And past month, at the end of April, we the last in a series of topics called International Student Recruitment Priorities came out, and it was titled Modeling Flexibility in Planning. Title might be a little obscure, Modeling Flexibility in Planning, but the reality of what international admissions offices are facing these days is adaptability, flexibility, change is everything. I had the pleasure of presenting to on a panel yesterday to Region 10, NASA Region 10, New York, New Jersey, colleges and universities. Had over 100 people show up for that webinar. talking about, that were, they had questions about what their, what the challenges are, what they're facing, and some of the solutions that might be potentially out there for them. And I just finished this article for IDP Connect and was able to help share a lot of that content with them yesterday, and not just from the article, but things that are happening that really encourage me in the industry that, there are innovators in, amongst, in our community. There are colleges and universities who truly get it and who see the way things have always been done is not the way that they can be done moving forward as institutions in the terms of the way way we approach international student recruitment, the way we conduct our admissions process, the policies we have in place to evaluate international students. So what the article and how my take on how international admissions can survive this these times is by taking a change mindset. And what that means is reconsidering everything. And it's a time which you're, I know for the last few months, 2 months at least, you've been just scrambling to take care of your current international students, make sure they're okay, their needs are met. But at a time when you were planning admitted student events, when you were looking at ways that you could be ensuring that your fall class would be everything that you wanted it to be back last fall when you started the recruitment cycle for them, you realize that your world's been turned upside down. There are people in our industry that have lost their jobs as a result. On a webinar yesterday with NAFSA Region 10, there were colleagues who were getting on saying, my recruitment budget is slashed. I have nothing from whatever it was down to zero. I have no marketing budget. I have no advertising ability. I'm basically flying armchair recruitment only with no budget. So those are it forces all of us to either give up and walk away or knuckle down and figure out what can we be doing differently to help us better engage with our prospective student audiences and convince them that our campus is the one that's right for you. There's a lot more change that's coming down the pike, obviously, at institutions that are struggling. My prediction is there will be 400 to 500 university and colleges that close over the next year as a result of the financial damage that's been done by COVID-19. There's already been two in the last 2 weeks. We've had Urbana University here in Ohio, and just recently Holy Names up in Wisconsin has closed as of the end of this term. So it's really a time where they will be the first of many, I'm afraid, of colleges that will end up shuttering. But how you can survive if you are at an institution that is still alive and running and is providing you at least the space to do what you need to do is what are the things you can be doing on in your offices to approach international student recruitment differently, and where and if there's ever been a time when change is needed, and administration officials up the chain need to be open to change, it's this because we know for a fact that international students are going to drop off this fall. It's just a reality that is the facts and evidence with regard to the survey trends, with regard to visa issuance inability right now, with regard to travel restrictions and potential other hurdles that get put in place between now, or that are in place now that may still be there come August and September when students might be arriving. There will be a drop off. How bad it is going to depend a lot on what you do between now and then. And the earlier you do things to transition, the better. Some of these, what we're going to talk about today, are a little bit more longer term planning topics, but certainly are ones that relate to ways that you can be doing what you do better as it relates to your future international students and how you recruit them. Some of these are policy changes that are going to require running up the chain at your institutions to get done, but some of them will involve your willingness to do the work that you need to find out, okay, is clearly what has been the way we've been doing things, at least for this fall, isn't working. What can we do to be better reaching our audiences? And for For the way I looked at it for the article is there are three general areas that I see that where universities and colleges that are looking internationally for students can change tack. First is in admissions policies, then recruitment markets, and communications. And the last piece, the communications piece, is probably the most intricate and complex part of the recruitment process. But the first two help lay the foundation, if you do the first two right, and become more flexible and adaptable with your admissions policies and with where you focus your efforts in recruiting. By doing this, taking these first two steps, when you start the communication review of how you can be adjusting how you're communicating and messaging to your students, the better prepared you'll be and the better able you'll be able to focus your attention in the right places. With admissions policies, we're talking everything from how complex our international admissions process is in the United States. Just in general, for an undergraduate student coming to the United States to have potentially SATs or ACTs, IELTS, TOEFLs, also maybe potentially we're going to need a couple essays, a couple recommendation letters, their list of their extracurriculars, all of these things that in most of the rest of the world aren't, other than maybe testing, and their academic transcripts from their schooling. Those things are not really present other than English language proficiency for the English-speaking destination countries. So our processes are too complex at most schools. We know how difficult it is on the visa end for students to get visas and to enter the country through DHS at the border. So what we realize is we know the benefit of our education system once they're here, but getting them here is the hard part, and convincing them that it's a process worth investing in. And it's a tough sell at times, increasingly tougher now. But the things that we can do to adjust our policies for how we admit students to our institutions, I think, is critical to streamline that process as much as possible. To look at things like becoming test optional for SAT or ACT. We've talked about this numerous times on the roundup before, but just this past month, or since January, there's been 50 universities and colleges that have gone test optional, some for just this next academic recruitment cycle, some for 2 to 3 years. Others are looking to make these permanent changes. We've seen 10 colleges in the last week alone, in addition to that 50, that have been gone test optional, including Cornell, the first Ivy League school to go test optional, again, just for this next recruitment cycle. But this is an indicator. These are public universities, these are small private liberal arts colleges, big Ivy League schools that are seeing the need to be test optional and be flexible in how they admit international students. Another part of the test with regard to testing on admissions policies is your English language proficiency exams. We all know TOEFL and IELTS have been the big two forever, but for the PTE academic has come up in the last few years, certainly the last 8-9 years, but you've also seen more creative approaches to English language assessment like Duolingo that have popped onto the radar recently. There are now over 300 U.S. schools that are accepting Duolingo. We saw right at the beginning of the pandemic, universities like University of Missouri decided to accept Duolingo as an alternative because TOEFL and IELTS had to cancel test dates in March and April and now May. And now that they went ahead and said Duolingo is now accepted here for University of Missouri Columbia, and that was our undergrad programs. That showed their flexibility, and hopefully they see some results from that. But policies are an important part of the process, and there are some that are desperately outdated and need changing. But you also look at some things like your application fees, changing to rolling admissions for international students, eliminating deposit requirements or moving the deposit dates. These are small steps that you can take to help streamline that process for your international audience. Because it is a very complex one, and we don't do enough to really make it an easier process for students. The other two pieces of this article for how international admissions can get themselves out of this and lay some foundations for a stronger recruitment cycle next year is country level planning. And the choice of where you recruit and spend your time, spend your money in recruiting students from overseas. How you do that, if it's armchair or travel, and we all know what how badly travel's been affected or will be affected for the fall. It's a totally different world, particularly the early part of the fall. Most tours will not be running in the fall because of all the potential challenges. If you're lucky to be able to do individual or small group travel where you have flexibility in your scheduling, then that's probably the way to go if you can travel. What has to happen is in where you travel to, where you spend your money, is why are you spending it in one country as opposed to another? What is your rationale? How are you justifying that? How are you backing that up, your choices up with data, where you travel, where you advertise online? And looking at those things, the countries that are currently sending large amounts of students, those that are showing signs of strong growth, and nations that have recently emerged onto the scene as senders of students. However you get to those, categorize and use those three categories of countries to evaluate whether that's national or global level data, whether that's institutional data that you've seen or from your prospective student pool, if you've seen these bumps, hopefully it's a combination of all three, but where you're seeing the bumps in your interest from particular countries, if those have been converting to applicants over the last year, maybe that's a country you need to be investing more in, depending on your overall numbers. But the more you analyze each of your recruitment markets and have different strategies, frankly, in addition to obviously different messaging, which is an important part of that third part, it's why, if you're looking at China as opposed to India, are there different platforms you need to be on that aren't necessarily going to be common to each country? So what, in the end, the communication piece is where the rubber hits the road. If you set the foundation with better and more flexible admissions policies, and you've identified your markets appropriately, that were with solid information-based, data-based decision-making, why you're going to certain places, then when you get to the communication stage, it's developing the services and the messages for your target markets that are customized and personalized to students and parents, potentially, from the countries that you're making an effort to recruit students from. And the more personal you get with and can customize it with country-level examples from students, faculty, successful alumni, parents of current students who can be part of that communication process, and the way those messages can be delivered on multiple channels, multiple levels, is a bedrock foundation of any successful communication strategy moving forward. The more granular you can get, obviously if you're a one-person operation, that's going to be very difficult to do, and there are other ways that we can certainly talk about personally, but that you can use to achieve the goals that you have. You're doing much different scale, but look at the ways that your recruitment can be done using these principles of flexibility, adaptability, and change, because that's the only way you're going to get through these days, because of the such a turbulent nature of how our institutions are being impacted by what's going on with COVID-19, how we're all just trying to stay one step ahead of the curve sometimes. It's a very hard thing to do, but certainly if you're taking the right time and energy to invest in the policy work you need to do, the research work you need to do, and the communication piece that you need to develop more fully to reach students. And if travel's not going to be an option for you in the fall, here's what you need to be doing to make your case for a much more robust approach to international student recruitment. Now, let's shift gears to the second question. What are prospective students thinking? And I'm going to focus on two different articles, one from the Pi News and one from Times Higher Ed. And I bring up the first article from the Pi News because this Pi News, I obviously, as you know, have a high regard for their reporting, and they get stories that that really help paint a different picture than some of the mainstream Chronicle or Inside Higher Ed press articles might do. But what this article about China and Chinese students and parents says And the theme of it is Chinese students are reconsidering plans to study in the United States. Both this article and the Times Higher Ed article have similar themes to them in that there are now a lot of doubts about coming to the United States, that the coronavirus has populated in the minds of students and parents. There's obviously desires there's always been the strong desire to go abroad for Chinese students. Now, according to this survey, the nature of the survey is important. I'll get to that in a minute. But this survey reflects that other destinations are becoming increasingly popular for Chinese students and parents. Now, let's take a pause here on this particular article. It's an article that reflects a survey conducted by Amherst College, by their coordinator of international recruitment, where they have 54 school-based college counselors in China that were surveyed. 87% said Chinese students and parents were reconsidering their plans for studying in the U.S. and diversifying their options of college destinations. So let's take that for a minute. This group of counselors, I should say, is one that the coordinator of international recruitment there at Amherst College has conducted. Xiaofeng Wan is the individual, the coordinator of international recruitment, and her indication is this is bad news. Obviously, when you see 87% of Chinese students and parents saying that they're reconsidering plans. Now, this is a network of college counselors that she has developed over the years, she was featured in an Inside Higher Ed article. I think she wrote it, an opinion piece she wrote that came out last fall, that also had this same group of counselors that were surveyed. It wasn't obviously as significantly negative as this one is, but their concerns over safety, on unpredictable policies toward Chinese students, and we all know where that's coming from in the U.S., and concerns about postgraduate work experience and fears of visa denial or deportation after arrival. So very legitimate concerns on some of those issues with the rhetoric that's been poured out by this administration. So, but the challenge is what they're hearing about in this pandemic. There's been a lot of blame that's been thrown around. A lot of cover-ups that have been going on, particularly in China, and that's been documented fairly quickly. And how particularly the doctor who blew the whistle on it, he ends up dying of the disease and was basically censured for his tone. And the reports that have been coming out recently on the death toll in China was vastly underestimated. No shock there, given it's China. But there are serious concerns, obviously, with how the information that these parents and students are getting about how the U.S. is viewing them. When you have a U.S. senator the other day say something to the effect of Chinese students shouldn't be allowed to come and study STEM fields because they take that knowledge back to China, those kinds of statements do nothing to help our cause. But it only gets amplified within China, obviously, in terms of their attempts to control information and control the message. So there are certainly issues that we're seeing with regard to China. Obviously a small sample survey of 54 school-based counselors, greater majority of which are saying that U.S. is becoming less attractive to Chinese students. So interesting to see where that goes. The Times Higher Ed article also kind of paints a broader brush interest in overseas education, more Western destinations. Obviously, Times Higher Ed is UK-based, but it's considering Western options. The challenges are cancellations of programs, disease control, discrimination, all of the issues that they're and stories that they hear about. What's happening in other countries, how China's got it all under control now, but all these other countries are really panicking. It's leading them to have some more significant doubts, and I'm not surprised by that. So we'll see where that goes with regard to China. There were other surveys that we covered in the newsletter on Monday that certainly refer back to that, that have had more domestic, some other domestic input on, or domestic views on how the number of students that are planning to come in the fall is changing dramatically. Potentially, NAFSA is predicting a 25% to 30% drop in new international enrollments this fall, and the impact that's going to be in the neighborhood of $10 billion of economic damage to the United States, on top of everything that's already happened with all the stay-at-home orders and the 30 million unemployed Americans as a result of those stay-at-home orders. That there's a great economic, financial, personal safety, all these kind of health issues that are flying around that are just piling on top of one another for prospective students, let alone what we're feeling individually in our offices. So there's the New York Times, when we, in terms of taking a step forward and looking at that, where's your college in the Tale of Two Falls, in terms of what the two primary ways colleges will open, either online or on campus, or combinations of the two. And most colleges will have some combination of the two, but have the desire to be on campus. As we talked last week, there are California schools that are already saying, UCLA this week has said they're going to be online only for the first quarter. Some of the Cal State schools, Fullerton, as we mentioned last week, will be online only for their first term as well. So there are a lot of there's a lot of uncertainty. There's even talk of for public schools here in Ohio that they may be on a 2 days on, 2 days off kind of situation, where students, half a class would go in for 2 days Monday, Wednesday, and the other half would go in for in-class instruction Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday and the other days would be virtual days. So much like they've been doing this latter part of the spring. So there's still a lot of uncertainty out there, not just on university campuses, but public schools all over society, in terms of how we will be opening up and how change will be made to better reflect what the realities on the ground will be for prospective students coming in from overseas. So a whole lot of other issues involved here. But New York Times, this is when we talk about the Tale of Two Falls. The ones that I'm focusing on for this week, the New York Times article is referencing the president of Brown University, giving her take, Christina Paxson, the president of Brown, that they must reopen in the fall, and here's how they're going to do it. She paints from my perspective a very real. A real possibility is that higher education will crumble without it, without being on campus in the fall. So she paints a very stark picture of what could happen, that the reality is on the ground that students want to be back on campus, and they should and for what they're paying, they should be expected. And that's going to be a sticker for a lot of students, that even if they are given an online only option in the fall, they're going to want to have a tuition break because they're not getting all the benefits of the on-campus activities and everything else that gets bundled into tuition rates these days. So President Brown makes a very strong case that if there isn't on-campus instruction, there's going to be some serious financial implications. We know this already. We've talked about what other institutions as large and as significant as Johns Hopkins posted the hundreds of millions of dollars that they're losing as a result of the shutdowns. But really, I think a very useful article from the president of Brown, obviously an institution, Ivy institution, huge endowments, and probably weather the storm much better than most other institutions, particularly private institutions, small privates. So, what the other when I say Tale of Two Falls, the other side of the coin are looking at states like Michigan. We saw an article last week about Michigan State and then how they're predicting they're going to be ahead this coming fall. And overall enrollment in undergrad, yes, not too sure about international. There are still some concerns there. And I can't imagine that they're not going to be down in international like everybody across the board would be or is expected to be. But Michigan, Michigan's universities and colleges bleeding revenue amid coronavirus closures. So this is taking into account large publics in Michigan, but also some small privates that have a very uncertain future after campuses were forced to close in the spring. That at the University of Michigan alone, they're saying their president has indicated it's going to be up to $1 billion of economic loss. $1 billion at one institution, obviously, albeit the flagship institution in Michigan. Anywhere on the low end, $400 million to $1 billion, according to their predictions. So top level faculty or top level administrators are getting cuts to salaries, hiring and wages are frozen, voluntary furloughs, work hour reductions. At some institutions here in Ohio, they're doing, and across in the country, I think, they're doing eliminations on retirement contributions from the universities to that. So there's a whole host of different cuts that institutions are already making this fall, or this spring, that they have to be able to make ends meet. So the margins, unfortunately, for a lot of colleges are not as big as we think they are. So they're being forced to make these hard decisions now. But I can't imagine these decisions are going to get reversed anytime soon, particularly when you consider what's coming this fall, unless major changes happen. And that's nothing's really indicating that's in the cards anytime soon. So a lot to go through in terms of digesting what we do each week in international education. But I encourage all of you, as I mentioned earlier, to subscribe to the newsletter so you get that information first on Mondays. And then we'll talk more in depth about three of those questions here at the Roundup each Wednesday. So thanks again for joining me this week, and we look forward to chatting with you again in the weeks to come. Cheers.